After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me, as always, is my colleague, Joe Healy. And today we are starting our series for the offseason, what we're going to call our Clubhouse Conversation Series, where we bring on guests from around the college baseball world to talk to us about their programs, their teams, looking back at last year, looking ahead to next year, and anything in between. Today we're starting that series with Virginia Tech coach John Scheff. So excited to hear from him about the Hokies, both the 2022 season when they won the ACC and made it to Super Regionals, and looking ahead to 2023, which looks to be pretty promising as well. So we're gonna do that here today on the Baseball America College Podcast, and that's something that we're gonna be doing throughout the off season now, is talking to people from around the game. If you've been listening to us in previous off seasons, you know that we like to bring on guests and do that. We're starting that up again here this week, and starting it with John Scheff, but we've got a lot to discuss otherwise here on the podcast today. So hopefully it's a fun one. It's the middle of August. It's kind of a dead period in college baseball, but we're gonna make it a little more lively.
Yeah, candidly, it's also a nice. It's certainly not a break, because we have to. There's actually more logistics involved in these podcasts, because we have to schedule and make questions, put up a question, make a questions document, share with each other, go over the question. There are some logistics, but it is kind of nice to, we're kind of reacting to a conversation as opposed to, carrying the entirety of a conversation in an episode. And so now we could do that, and we will do that for certain episodes this off season. And Lord knows we've had to kind of punt on ideas and just come up with something on the fly. We can do that, but having to do that every week becomes a pretty heavy lift. So it is kind of nice with this series to be able to just react to a conversation, talk about a specific team, and have that be the episode, as opposed to kind of going from soup to nuts, as they would say, on a concept for a podcast. So it's not a break, but it's just a shift in style that allows us to be a little bit more laid back in terms of how we're bringing the conversation to the table.
It also allows us to go a little bit deeper on whatever subject we're discussing, and usually that'll be an individual team here. We're not experts on all of these teams. We follow everyone from afar, and getting somebody within the program, be that a coach or a player, to tell us a little bit more. I mean, we're learning, and hopefully you're learning as well. And the goal with the programs that we choose for the series that this off season is to find more, not necessarily the very best programs, although I think hopefully those will all be covered as well, but just impactful programs as we look to 2023, interesting programs as we look to 2023. And I think that makes Virginia Tech a great one to start with, because Virginia Tech is a program that made a big leap forward in 2022. They they did a lot of things that the program hadn't either done ever or hadn't done in a long time. And, you know, just starting by making the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2013, let alone, you know, hosting a super regional and winning the ACC and all the rest of that. And now, like, they're looking to build on that momentum and everything. And I think they are one of the more interesting teams in a very interesting ACC as we look to 2023. So a lot to get into there. I will say that while Joe and I have compiled an early list of programs that we're hoping to feature over the course of the fall and into the early winter, we still would welcome any suggestions or requests. So if you have those, feel free to reach out and let us know who you might want to hear from throughout the course of this off season as we dive deeper into these. And you know, right now we're still kind of at a period of time where it's easier to look back at 2022 than to look at 2023. Players are still finishing up summer ball in some cases. As we record this, the Cape could finish tonight. It might get pushed one more day, but like this weekend's kind of it for that. For a lot of leagues around the country. But the point is that the players aren't back on campus yet. So it's still a little early to start looking at 2023. But as we get deeper into the fall, that's what these things will become more and more about, is, you know, fall ball starts happening and fall games, and there's just more information to know about the coming season. So looking forward to kind of the evolution of these as well as we go through the off season.
Yeah, it does. The nature of the conversation does shift a little bit as time goes on. They get a little more, maybe serious isn't the right word, because the tone can still be pretty lighthearted. Coaches tend to be, or even players for that matter, tend to be kind of a little more relaxed in the fall. I mean, the stakes obviously aren't as high. So there are a lot of reasons for that, but as time, I guess what I'm saying though, as time goes on, the questions and the conversations get a little more pointed. Whereas now we are kind of just doing a lot of, as you will hear in our interview with John Cheff, the questions tend to be a little more just reflecting on things and big picture and, you know, just kind of some like ethereal stuff as opposed to really bearing down on position groups or position battles, things of that nature. And there will be time for that. We will do that. But yeah, now is, I mean, even as we get advanced into the fall, there's a little bit of a throwing darts at a dartboard feeling about trying to nail down position groups, but certainly in August, that would definitely be the case. So, I look forward to the shifting tenor of those conversations because I certainly like fall ball more than you do. I understand the limitations of fall ball, but it is kind of nice. I think you would even agree to the idea that just being able to have like a more serious conversation about the roster once fall ball gets underway, understanding that we can only take it so seriously being fall ball. But it is kind of a nice change of pace once we get there.
Have you ever genuinely played darts?
Yes. I mean, I went to college in Texas. There was many a dartboard in those bars. I played it not well, I would say. But I did play it. Yes.
I've never, like, I mean, I've thrown darts at a dartboard, but not like in a serious manner. I don't think I've ever had like a real game of darts.
Yeah. I had a friend who, you know, fighting Texas Aggie class of 2010, whoop, who was a very good, like, kind of just, I mean, he wasn't like in leagues, although he might've been in a league, but was like a very good, just kind of like the way you'd say, somebody's a scratch golfer. He was like a scratch dart thrower. I don't know what the phrase is, but just a very, very good dart thrower. Like, you know, was, you know, all because there's several different versions of I'm showing my ignorance here, but there's several different versions of the game darts you can play based on the scoring and all that kind of stuff. And like, he could do it all. Like, you know, he could triple bullseye a thing, or he could, you know, hit the outer rings just on command. He'd do some trick shots where he'd crouch down like a center, like hiking a football, and would just kind of hike the dark between his legs at the board, like, and he could do stuff like that. So it was pretty impressive. But yeah, I've played some, never against him. Well, I did play against him, but we were never playing seriously because that would not have been a fair fight. But I've played darts, just not this, not on any sort of real serious level.
Interesting game, as you say, many different varieties, kind of like billiards, I guess.
And a big deal overseas. Like I've seen what is now called Bally Sports. What used to be Fox Sports, you know, Fox Sports Midwest, Fox Sports, you know, Florida, Fox Sports Houston, all this kind of stuff, would periodically show darts on TV, and might still for that matter. But like the World Series of darts across the pond in the UK is a very big deal. And it's kind of a rowdy, like people like going to it because it is like a rowdy atmosphere, which is kind of funny because it feels so, it doesn't feel like the right kind of thing for a rowdy crowd, like darts, you know, kind of like bowling being a rowdy crowd doesn't feel like it fits. But for darts in the UK, it does. Very, very serious about their darts over there.
The ESPN just did ESPN Ocho with, and our friend Ryan McGee was hosting part of that. And I guess darts is too serious for ESPN Ocho, but
that's right. It's too mainstream.
Okay. Before we get into our interview here with John Scheff, just a couple of news items from around college baseball. One happened last week. We didn't get to it on the podcast, but Campbell is headed from the Big South to the Colonial. That will happen next summer. So the Camels are still in the Big South for 2023. But Joe, the CAA is becoming a pretty interesting baseball conference. And look, I don't know what this is going to amount to in a world where the SEC has 16 teams. It's kind of hard to know, like, okay, so what does that mean? How many of these bids, like how many of these conferences can like be regular multi-bid leagues? But the CAA is going to have Campbell, Charleston, Northeastern, Stony Brook, and UNCW. I mean, all of those programs have shown pretty significant upside on the baseball field. So I obviously not all of them have hit all of the heights. You know, Stony Brook went to Omaha and hasn't really been back at that level. They've been very good in the America East, but what is that going to look like in the CAA? Who knows? And you know, UNC Wilmington has been very good consistently, but hasn't won a regional yet. I mean, so everyone's kind of at a different level in terms of like how far they've pushed it. But all of those programs are there will be interesting baseball play in that league. I can promise you that at least.
Yeah, I think that's right. And it's a great point you bring up about how we're going to define these mid and low major league. Well, I guess low major will always just be single mid leagues, but how we're going to define these mid major leagues moving forward, because you're right. We use the term two bid league, right? And like there's a certain subset of leagues that we kind of define as two bid leagues. Like there are leagues that are better than that. Like we actually probably think of the American as better than just a two bid league, even though that has not been the case the last couple of years, but two bid leagues tend to be leagues like the Colonial, where we say like, you know, and they're a two bid league in their good years. And that has largely been the case, but yeah, it's a great point you bring up. Cause I hadn't really considered in a world where just inevitably the SEC and perhaps now the Big Ten, right, is going to grab a couple of extra bids maybe.
And also the Sun Belt, like, is kind of difficult to grapple with because we've talked about what that ceiling could be, but like,
right,
I don't know, like that's a league that's been a two bid league before. Like, is it now more than that? Probably, but like how much more? I don't know.
Yeah, so that will be interesting, is like how often do we expect a league like the Colonial, which is like sometimes two bids, sometimes not. There's really no, from year to year, you're not sure exactly what you're going to get in that regard. Like, how do we define that? What are expectations? That's an interesting conversation for down the road. But just on paper, yeah, I mean, that's a really good baseball league. You know, I selfishly enjoy that because, you know, some of those leagues or some of those teams are convenient to me living here, convenient to you, frankly, living where you do. So, I'm looking forward to it. And for Campbell, I think that the Big South has been a multi-bid league. It was, you know, when Presbyterian won the tournament a couple of years ago, and So there is that. I don't know if it ever was when Coastal was running that league or not, but
it was every once in a while, but it definitely hasn't been at that lately, especially since Coastal left. It's been two bids if somebody pulls an upset in the conference tournament.
Right. And so, yeah, I guess using the previous metric, we would not define the Big South as like a two-bid league typically. So it certainly is an upgrade for Campbell. I think it's buys them a little bit of, because look, Campbell has proven that a Big South schedule supplemented by really quality midweek competition, and they have access to a lot of it in the Carolinas by playing, you know, they play all the biggest names in the Carolinas, can be enough to get you an at-large bid. Being in the CAA, at least on paper, should buy them a little bit more room for error. Not a ton, right? They're not moving to the Sun Belt or the SEC, obviously, but it does buy them some more room for error. So as long as they continue to win at a similar clip to what they were in the Big South, I do think it sets them up for being a postseason at-large quality team more often than they were as a member of the Big South. I think that's for sure.
So that'll be something to watch, minor realignment story, but in baseball, maybe a little bit bigger than it is in really any of the other sports, frankly. The other piece of news was yesterday, Southern Miss announced that former coach Corky Palmer passed away. He was 68. He was the coach of Southern Miss in 2009 when the Golden Eagles reached the College World Series for the first and so far only time in program history. He also took Meridian Mississippi Junior College to three Junior College World Series. Just a really, really big figure in college baseball in the state of Mississippi. A part of, you know, Southern Miss has been a proud program for a long time, but he is a big figure within Southern Miss baseball history.
Yeah, I mean, there's basically, in the modern era, I mean, you go back, I'm trying to pull up the years here because I want to be correct about this, but I mean, basically, yeah, you go back to the mid 80s, 1984, when Hill Denson takes over. I mean, those guys, Hill Denson, Corky Palmer, now Scott Barry, are really the three guys that have kept Southern Miss at this level, brought Southern Miss to this level, and kept them at this level in kind of the modern era. And that's what we know is, that's how Southern Miss got to be what we know them as, being one of the best non-power conference college baseball programs out there. And I think Corky Palmer has as much of that with as anybody, right? Like Hill Denson kind of lays the groundwork here, you know, gets the program to, you know, its first Division I NCAA tournament appearance, you know, kind of lays a foundation there. And then Corky Palmer takes it to the next level in that crowning achievement, of course, getting to the College World Series in 2009, going through Florida to do so, if I remember correctly. He kind of really takes it to the next level and shows that, hey, Southern Miss can be a nationally, not just a regionally, but a nationally relevant program. And now, although Scott Barry has not led the Golden Eagles like back to Omaha, for example, just the consistency with which Southern Miss is a top flight program, Southern Miss has now hosted regionals more often than it ever has under Scott Barry. So you can make an argument, even though he has not gotten the team back to Omaha, that he has raised the level again of kind of the expectations for Southern Miss baseball. And of course, now Scott Barry is now the winningest coach, both by total wins and by percentage in Southern Miss baseball history. So it feels like of those three guys, Corky Palmer might be the most consequential, just because he was the one that really established a nationally relevant standard for Southern Miss baseball. And I, you know, he was out of the game by the time I was covering it. So I've never met him. I've never spoken with him, but he's spoken of highly by a lot of people whose opinions I value and trust. And so he was a character in college baseball, and college baseball is a sport that does a really good job of producing and celebrating characters in our sport. And from my understanding, he was certainly one. So a great coach and, you know, an interesting guy to have in our sport. And so, you know, certainly well wishes are with his family, and rest in peace to a unique character in our sport and an icon and one of the architects of one of the most fun, interesting college baseball programs out there, because there are a lot of reasons why Southern Miss should not be what it is in college baseball. And he's a big part of why they are what they are when like I said, they probably in a lot of ways should not be.
Very well said. So again, as Joe said, well wishes to his family and to the Southern Miss baseball family and the extended college baseball family in Mississippi. He was a very revered figure in many places down in that part of the country. All right. We are going to get to our interview here with John Scheff in just a second. Our first guest in the Clubhouse Conversation series here on the Baseball America College Podcast, and we'll have him here just in a second. But first, check this out.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Why do I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America? Because it takes so much of the busy work out of hiring and does it for me. I can find highly qualified candidates in one place, set up interviews, and communicate with them all on Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualification preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So you use Indeed. As you use it more, the better it gets. And listeners to this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place by working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies. We keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Today on the Baseball America College Podcast, we are happy to be joined by Virginia Tech coach John Scheff. Virginia Tech, of course, coming off of an impressive season. They won 45 games, reached Super Regionals, and won the ACC. So, Coach, obviously it was a great 2022 season, and we're looking forward to getting into that with you today and starting to look ahead to next season already as well.
Sure, absolutely.
All right. So now that you've gotten a little bit of time to reflect on the way the season went this spring, just what do you make of the year, and how do you what are your reflections on 2022?
Well, I mean, an awful lot of time went into that year, not just by our coaching staff, but the players on that team. I was a really kind of a special group of guys. As I go back a year ago, post Major League draft, we got hit with some surprises in that draft that when we came out of that draft, we didn't feel really good about it. You know what I mean? You never want to have surprises in a draft if you can avoid them. And we had some more on the pitching side than anything else. So we kind of started to adopt maybe a plan of how we're going to go about it, you know, from a pitching perspective. And we had talked about it for a while as far as not putting a lot of pressure on first-time starters in the ACC, you know, having to maybe have them go in shorter stints. And so we kind of went into the fall that way, and it was post-COVID at that time. So we're able to do more things, events off the field with the group, and try to bring the group back together, as opposed to during COVID, you're trying to drive everybody apart. And, I think a lot of the team stuff, the team event away from baseball stuff helped bring the group together. It ended up being a really talented group. It was kind of most known probably for its offensive prowess, but what really ended up happening actually was our team pitched very, very well, probably better than what we had anticipated at this time last year. You know, we didn't have anybody coming back that had a lot of ACC starting experience. And guys like Griffin Green and Drew Hackenberg, a true freshman who didn't pitch last fall because he was a little tender coming off of his high school season. And, you know, he had some grad transfer guys, a guy like Jordan Gieber, step in and really serve some roles for us. Our bullpen was very good. We had a healthy Henry Weicker. and a guy like Kiernan Higgins developed as the season went on as a grad transfer. You know, he had walked 54 guys at the Division II level the year before. And, you know, those numbers were kind of really skewed against him going into last year. And you know, he ended up leading our team in saves and had a 1.9 ERA. And, you know, it was just a lot of guys that really elevated their games. And I think that, and it was a very tight-knit team. And the last thing was that we had the majority of our good players were available for the majority of the season. We, knock on wood, we did not run into major injuries last year going down the stretch. And I think that helped us win, dramatically helped us win 9 consecutive weekends in the ACC. And that's something that I will never underestimate, or no one can ever take that away from that group, that they won 9 consecutive weekends in the ACC. A feat that probably, as I look back on it now, which you asked me to look back on it, I don't know that you'll really see that. I'd like to see the research on that with how many teams have won that many consecutive weekends in any Power 5 league as of recent. And so I give our guys a lot of credit, coaching staff a ton of credit, and our players, and, you know, for their accomplishments. And a lot of guys have gotten rewarded pretty dramatically for it. And but, you know, you move on to the next year, and that's what college sports is. You have to recreate it, and you have to remake the puzzle and do it with a different group of guys. And the best programs are able to do that. And that's our goal, and that's what we aim to do. Long answer there.
No worries. Coach just gave us a little more homework there. I got to go take a look at that now and see how many ACC teams can say that, because I think your hunch, Coach, is right that number is incredibly small, if not non-existent. That'll be interesting. You mentioned
I haven't seen the research on that, but I'd really like to see it, because
yeah, we'll see what we can do.
I'd really like to see how many like what teams rivaled that. That's a very, very large number. And I think any coach would tell you that, and I would have never bet. I'd have probably bet a lot of money, because sooner or later, it's just the ball. It's going to take a bad hop. Like, it's going to go against you. You know, it just is, especially in a league like this where the teams are so good and the programs are so good, and it's hard to explain. I mean, we had a lot of really good players, but I'm sorry, I'm going on a tangent here. That was just a very, very significant number for me.
Yeah, no doubt. You mentioned the cumulative work that this group of players had put in through the years. It had to be gratifying in light of that to see at the end of the season, in addition to the on-field success, guys like Gavin Cross, Tanner Schoble coming off the board early in the draft, getting professional opportunities, in addition to a bunch of guys you had get that opportunity at the end of the season. How gratifying is that for you and your coaching staff to see that work pay off, both team-wise and individually?
Well, I mean, it is gratifying. There's no doubt about it. I'm really happy for those guys. You know, those guys and the other guys that were picked. But honestly, like, you know, the draft is a very unexact science. You don't really know how it's going to go, you know. And, I mean, if Gavin Cross ends up being the 20th pick in the draft as opposed to the 9th, does it make him any less of a player? I don't think so. But, you know, I'm looking at that draft on that Sunday, and Rocker goes in the top 3. And then all of a sudden Cade Horton, a kid we faced from Oklahoma, goes 7, and I don't think people are anticipating that. I'm saying, well, is that going to knock Gavin back? You know, but I mean, again, if he's picked 20, is he a worse player? No, he's not a worse player. It's just the way that draft went. You know, you see all these guys signing as free agents now. And I'm sure some of our guys look at that and be like, wow, these guys are, you know, hundreds of guys are signing as free agents. I probably could have done that too. Does it make him a less of a player? No. It's just the way professional baseball sees it at the time. So, yeah, it's gratifying individually, yes, no doubt about it. But I take a lot of solace and really the gratification for me more is what that group did together against really good teams to get to where they got to. And typically when teams are that successful and they do really well, you will have, you know, a lot of people want, a lot of the pro people want a piece of them, you know, and that's what happened. I'm surprised, a little bit surprised it didn't happen with more guys, to be quite honest. But, you know, that's one of the beauties about baseball. People see the game differently. They look at the same game and they see it several different ways. And, but yeah, our guys, they really had, it was a very successful draft for Virginia Tech baseball in general. And, but this year we didn't really have any surprises thrown at us. Any negative surprise, the draft went exactly the way we figured it would for the most part. And we were prepared for it and we feel really good about where we are right now.
Anybody who, like me, was at the regional or the next weekend in the super regional, you know, I think anybody who was there would have been struck like I was about the level of fan support and just how incredible those atmospheres were and how ready that fan base was to support a team that was as good as the one you guys had last season. When you arrived at Virginia Tech, to what degree did you kind of understand that that was something that was possible, or were you even a little bit maybe surprised by certain aspects of the support you received?
Well, I think anything's possible, but I think it shows how much our fan base enjoys watching winning athletics. If you go to a lot of the other sports that we have, many of them, you know, the people, they turn out, they enjoy watching winning athletics. You know, I think our ballpark, you know, I give our administration a lot of credit. It's a nice venue to watch a baseball game. We had got really good weather. We played in the evening. So it was, you know, I mean, you got concessions, you got good views. And I, you know, and I think they appreciated good teams coming in there and it was good competition. And, but, you know, to their core now, they want to win. Like they expect to win. And that's, I love that. Like, to me, that's a great challenge to put a great product on the field for our people, because our people, you know, they like competition, but to again, you know, they expect to win. And you can see that across all our sports. So, as does everyone associated with our program. Like, it's nice and everything. The venue's great. You know, the competition's great. But at the end of it, you know, we expect to walk away on top of things, on the top side, not the bottom. And that'll never change. But I think this group set a really high standard. And I think our people appreciated it. And I think they came out and they supported it. They supported softball, too. And we had four straight weekends on our campus that we had a regional or a super regional going on between us and softball. So it was really, really good time for the Hokie fans in general to see good softball, good baseball, and come support athletics. Because typically, I mean, you know, you're going to see 75,000 in that football stadium next month. And then they support Mike in basketball and Kenny in basketball and the other sports as well. You know, Roby and wrestling and all of them in general. And they should. That's the best athletic year, I think, in Virginia Tech history, as far as that many teams going to the NCAA tournament and football going to a bowl game and everything else. But, it was not where it really got me, honestly, and a lot of our players have mentioned this. You go out to take batting practice and there's, you know, there's 500 people are watching batting practice. Like, and I've been that. Oh man, 12 NCAA regionals and stuff, you know, in the past, and typically you don't see that many people there in a pregame. So that was a pretty cool deal, having people there that early. And And, you know, I think it put a lot of, I told our guys, hey, these people, you know, they enjoy coming and watching, but they want to keep coming back. So we gotta press forward and have good results here, you know? So.
I think it must have helped because the team was such a fun team to watch. There were all those home runs and the team seemed to have a lot of fun with that. And of course there was the hammer as well that people got into that now I guess has to go away or at least it be changed. What is the future of that? Have you guys thought through that? And I mean, just the rule change, what do you think about all of that?
Well, it was a fun team. I mean, everybody, most fans enjoy watching a lot of offense. Offense is fun to watch. I think if you sat the core baseball fan down and said, offense is fun to watch. I like watching offense too, especially when we're on the offensive side of it. But like the 4-3 baseball game, the 3-2 baseball game that's filled with some offense and some pitching and defense and some strategy and pitching moves, pitching changes. Those games are fun to watch too. And I think it was a mix of that in the postseason. We had some high scoring games and we had some low scoring strategic games. And so I think the whole thing was fun. As far as the whole prop thing goes, you know, like I'm not really going to get into that a whole, like, I mean, to me, well, we spent so much of our time in the offseason just trying to get this group in a good place for next year. I really haven't given that a whole lot of thought. Last year in the super regional, when you know we got the order from above, whatever, I gotta be careful how we say this here. You know, our guys started using the air hammer, and that was Carson DeMartini's idea. And God bless him; it was a hell of a good idea. I would imagine we'll come up with something like it. You know, I'm not gonna allow the people that are making those decisions to take my focus off what my job is, and that's to put the best group on the field. And we'll find a way to celebrate the offense like we have in the past, whether it's in the dugout or whether it's with an air hammer or whatever it is. It'll work itself out. If that's our biggest problem we have this year, we'll be just fine.
So. Hey, it's probably a good way to put it, Coach. We'll just for Teddy, we'll just say it for Teddy. In my opinion, that college baseball is a fun game. Let the kids have some fun with stuff like that. And that is Joe and Teddy's opinion, not that of John Chef. That is me and Teddy's.
No, but you're right. College athletics in general is that way. I mean, you got the Miami. I go back. You got the Miami turnover chain. You know, like, I mean, that's an example in a different sport. I mean, people come out to the ballpark to watch. They come out for the entertainment part of it. They come out. I mean, we have little kids swinging foam hammers. You know, we'll go out and recruit. I was recruiting in Georgia, and there was a couple of Virginia teams in Georgia playing on an adjacent field that they were younger kids. They were like 12-year-old kids playing next to a field where there were high school age kids. And kids hit a home run and they got a friggin' hammer in the dugout, you know? And I said, man, would you look at that, you know? And I mean, there's nothing wrong. I mean, it's not like professional baseball. I get pro baseball, you know, a pitcher takes care of the hitters and you got, you know, you have hit batsmen and I get that whole thing, but it's different. You know, I don't think there's like a malicious thing about it. It's, you know, if we're in Tennessee and they hit a home run, they put a fur coat on. I mean, I get it. I mean, that's, you know, that's what they do. That's part of their identity. There's nothing wrong with that. But other people don't see it that way. So anyway.
I think that's well said on your part. Spin it forward a little bit and start talking about looking ahead to next season as we, you know, don't look now, but, you know, the fall is basically officially here.
Sure. Absolutely.
Really broad question. You know, you the success that your team had last season, how are you looking to, how have you defined building on that? How do you build on that in this next season? What are the kind of things you're looking for as you head into the fall?
Well, probably two things. Number one, with the returning guys we have, I think we have a lot of really good returning players off that team. They were on the group from last year, which established a very high standard for the program. And so it'll be really a lot of our success will come from how those players monitor that standard and enforce that standard amongst themselves, amongst the new players. That's number one. And then number two, it all comes back to having good players. It really does, you know. And I think we have a good group coming back and a very good group coming in. We have a lot more experience on the mound than we had last year as far as ACC starting and or bullpen experience. We didn't have a whole lot of that last year coming back, and I give those guys a ton of credit for the success rate that they had with the lack of experience that they went into it with. But now you have a lot of really, really good pitchers coming back and some nice players coming in that have ACC experience. And then obviously on the offensive side, you know, you have the Hurleys and the DeMartinis and Carson Jones, among others, you know, Malinowski, some people coming back that are older players that have experience that should, again, maintain the standard that was set last year. And that's kind of how you grow as a program, is, you know, a standard's been set, and then it's up to the returning players to maintain that standard. So really, it's a matter of, do you have good enough players to maintain the level? I think the answer to that question is yes. Is it going to be really, really difficult to replace a Gavin Cross or a Tanner Schobler or some of the other guys? Absolutely. Like, I mean, I've been coaching since 1990, you know, for 32 years. And I'll be honest with you, I haven't had a first rounder. I've had a couple second rounds, but not a first rounder. So is it really hard to replace that guy? Yeah, I mean, I can't say no to that. You know, Schobler was maybe the best combination of offense and defense at that particular position that I've had over that many years. You know, you just don't replace guys like that. Those guys are like unicorns, you know. But the way you do replace them is with good players in a mix. Like, you're not going to have one player replace Gavin Cross or Schobel. You might have one player at shortstop playing defense at the rate Schobel did, but you're going to have a group of players producing the offense that those guys did, you know. And I think we have enough. We'll be okay. Like, we feel really good about where we are. I mean, but it will be quite a challenge replacing some of the guys that we lost. But when you go to Game 3 of a super regional and you win 45 games, then that's probably the position that you should be in. You know, I asked Skip Johnson, he just lost a ton of guys off that Oklahoma team, but he also just almost won a national championship too. So I imagine he feels probably pretty good about that also. So it's a little bit of give and take, but you got to keep things in perspective, I think.
Virginia Tech has had some success in its history, but it hasn't had a whole lot of sustained success. You have been able to sustain success at places that are maybe, you know, Marist went to 3 straight regionals with you.
Yep.
You took Maryland to back-to-back supers. Is there a secret to that you can apply, or is that just something that you have to, you know, as you build a program, you have to build in the consistency as well?
Well, you can't rest on it. Like, you can't rest on the success. Like, you can enjoy it, which I do, and I take a lot from time to time, you sit down and actually take a breath and look back and say, man, that's pretty good, you know. But you can't rest on it. You have to continue to you got to continue to build on it. You have to continue to push the people that that you work that are around you. And I don't really have to feel like I have to push our coaching staff, because our guys, they push me. I mean, our guys are aggressive, and I think that has a great reason for our success rate. But like, we'll have to keep pushing the envelope with the people that are around us, because it's not just our coaching staff, it's our support staff, and it's everyone that surrounds the program. And I think any coach would, in any sport, would tell you that you have to enjoy the success, but you can't rest on it. You have to keep pushing the envelope forward. And that's exactly what we're doing. that's the challenge again of college athletics. As I sit here years later, from starting in this profession a long time ago, but I it still really pumps me up to put the team together, put the bodies together, put the talent together. And then when they get here, now it's a whole different challenge. Now you have to put the group together, build the culture, hold the standard, and live up to the standard that the group last year set. That group set a humongously high standard, very high standard. I told those guys at the end of the year, I said, you know, you're going to be standing there in a gas station filling your car up, and someone's going to come up to you and say, hey, you know, you're wearing Virginia Tech stuff, blah, 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 blah. And they're going to ask you, and all of a sudden you're going to find yourself standing there talking to people and telling them the story of the 22 spring. And you're not even going to know who you're talking to, but they're going to want to know. They're going to want to know the story. And I've found myself many times telling it, but, you know, to people I don't know. And I can imagine during the summer, our guys have done the same thing. But now at some point, our players are going to have to get past it and to move on. And now they're going to have to maintain the standard, and they're not going to be able to rest on it, just like our coaching staff can't rest on it. Because there's probably, there's more out there. Like there's a higher level. And I'm not saying a higher level of wins or Omaha. That's not my point, but I think there's just as much of a challenge to maintain the consistent success as it is. That's harder than actually getting there in the first place. And I'm not measuring it by, okay, you're going to get the game service super easy. You're going to get to Omaha. Like, I don't know what the end product is. I can't say, but I can say that I've always looked at it from, if you get your team in the NCAA tournament, that's a good place to be. Now let's see how much success, how deep we can go into it from there. But you got to get there first. And now it's really hard to get there, as you guys know. I mean, look at all the teams that are on the outside looking in this year. I mean, look at NC State. Let's just talk. I mean, think about that for a second. I mean, you kidding me? You know, I mean, I love Mike Bianco, is a friend of mine. I've known Mike for a long time, for over 20 years. And that guy supposedly was one of the last teams in. You know, and they go win the whole thing. They obviously had good enough players for sure, and he did a hell of a job with them. But it's hard to get in. It's hard to get into that 64. Like if you're on the fence there, you know. But that's my standard, is get your team in, and then let's go from there, and let's see how much success we can have from there. You know, and that's kind of what I measure. I've measured it by that for many years, as far as the NCAA tournament, and then let's go from there and let's see how deep we can get into it.
So we will wrap up, but Teddy and I, with all of our guests, we like to have a little fun with our last question as we get you out of here. We like to ask our guests to describe their favorite sandwich. And so I will filibuster here for a second to give you, Coach Chef, a time to think about it a little bit, but some coaches answer with a sandwich they make at home, a sandwich they just make all the time, or they make in the coach's office or the locker room, all that kind of stuff. Or maybe it's a sandwich from a local place or a sandwich they grew up eating that their mom makes. Actually, you mentioned Coach Bianco, and he gave us the answer of his mom's Italian sandwiches from when he was a kid. So yeah, you can take it any direction you like. But Coach Chef, please describe your favorite sandwich.
Well, I actually had it a couple weeks ago. I was down in Fort Myers with my son. We had a couple hours to kill, so we went to Fort Myers Beach after a team had lost. And it's a grilled mahi sandwich with tartar sauce. Like everybody knows a mahi is white fish, but if you grill it just right, put some tartar sauce and lemon on it, that thing will just sing to you while you're eating it. It'll sing to me, I can tell you that. Unfortunately, I don't have it that much, and I can't make it in the office. But if you said to me, what sandwich would you want? I'd have a grilled mahi sandwich on sourdough bread with some lemon and some tartar sauce. And I'd be good for about a week after that.
That sounds about right, though. You can't sandwich like that. You can't overdo the condiments and stuff. You got to go pretty simple with the lemon, the tartar sauce. You got to let the fish really, really do the work.
That's well said, right? I can't say it any better. That's 100% right.
That is that's a great pick. And we we're gonna have to find some fish sandwiches because we're recording this around dinner time for the listeners, and we're all ready for that now.
Just thinking about it.
Well, Coach Chef, we really appreciate you taking the time to join us here today on the Baseball America College Podcast. There was a lot of fun watching that team this year, and I think we're gonna have a lot of fun watching them again in 2023. So, February feels like a really long way away, but when it does get here, we'll be really excited to see the Hokies out there on the diamond.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate the work you guys do and the attention to our program that you give it. And we will continue to work to uphold the standards so you guys pay attention so that we're worth paying attention to. Let me put it that way. So.
Thank you again to John Scheff for joining us here on the Baseball America College Podcast. Joe, Virginia Tech, like I do just feel like there's an emphasis on just how fun that team was this year to watch. They just clearly, so the offense was a big part of it, I guess. They hit a bunch of home runs. They scored a bunch of runs. That wasn't unique to them this year in college baseball. It was obviously a very high scoring environment this year, but they just always seemed like they were having fun doing it. Some of it is that the hammer was like the team got so into it. And, you know, that's not to say other teams with other props didn't get into theirs and they weren't fun. Like obviously Tennessee had fun with theirs, but not everyone was so into the, like they didn't all have such a fun time with it. Virginia Tech did their games. I mean, we've talked about this on the podcast before, like the games where they packed it in there and it happened somewhat sporadically. It wasn't like they had big crowds every day, but like there were a lot of students there. You could tell when you're watching them on TV and they were really into it. It was just a fun team to watch. And I enjoyed the Virginia Tech arc this year of this team that, I mean, you can rewind it back to 21. They got off to such an amazing start. They upset Miami, as I recall, in Coral Gables to start ACC play. And it was so early in the season because of how the ACC went about the 2021 season. And they were really good for the first half. And then they faded down the stretch and missed the tournament. And therefore, there weren't expectations on them going into 22. But they rolled. They got beat that first weekend in ACC play at Georgia Tech. But after that, they like Coach Scheff said, they didn't lose another ACC series the rest of the year. It was remarkable, and just seeing that build week after week was really impressive. And it was, like I said, it was just a great team to be able to watch.
Yeah, there was a point, really kind of at the business end of the season where, you know, you and I start to have to think about where we might go for regionals. And cause we don't have necessarily the benefit of just waiting until the field is announced to start making plans, especially when some of these regionals happened in small towns where there are only so many hotels, et cetera, et cetera.
Blacksburg.
Nope. And while we're on the topic. Yeah. beautiful, beautiful, but you know, not a lot of hotel,
options.
Thank you. Like my brain just completely stopped working there. But at some point, kind of the business end of the season, we started to look around and go like, you're up in the, just so listeners, you're up in the DC area. So it was like Maryland was kind of looking like it might be a thing. Ultimately it was, you know, maybe Virginia at some point. And then for me down here in the triangle, it was like, this is before Carolina goes on its run. Mind you, like we didn't know that Carolina was going to be bad, but I was thinking like, I might just have to end up going back to Knoxville, which is like a pretty significant drive. And that would have been fun. And it turns out that regional was pretty fun. Georgia Tech gave Tennessee at least a good game there in the regional final. But then Virginia Tech kind of comes on strong. And so it goes from not thinking, you know, not really, you know, thinking like, ah, I might really have to hit the road for regionals, to like, okay, Virginia Tech's an option that might happen, to by the end of it, it was like, so that's an option for regionals and supers if I need it, you know, like it became very clear, you know, late in the game that they went, because of that run late in the season that we alluded to there, like they went from being kind of off the board to being, you know, a regional, possible regional host, to a lock regional host, to a top eight, just with an impressive finish to the season. And you're right that they were well supported there. And I think there are a couple things there. One is that you're right to say that it wasn't always consistent during the season, but there's a learning curve to this kind of stuff. Like, they're not a fan base that's really conditioned to going to baseball games in April and May, because their teams haven't historically been very good at that time of year, or relevant at that time of year. And the facility is relatively new, right? So for a long time, they didn't have the nice facility they have now to watch their team. So that was a factor. And so there's kind of a learning curve here, but that type of season, the 2022 season, is how you start to build that, right? So you kind of lay a little more foundation. There's a bunch of students that went out to games this year that probably had a lot of fun. And so they come back to campus and they're going to want to go again next year. And then, you know, they bring friends of theirs who, you know, then will pass that on. And of course the local community catches on. And so, but those were great atmospheres. Now they don't have, you know, the sheer number of people as a lot of places, but those fans are really, really into it. It's a great place to watch a game. And I think you might've flipped on some of their games in the regional or even in the super against Oklahoma, and you might not have heard some of the crowd noise in a way you expected. I don't think they're done any favors by like the way that stadium is configured as far as noise goes, because it's very open. There's not really much of a seating bowl. Much of the crowd there is sitting on like berms, essentially. Now they're stair stepped, so you can actually physically sit and not be sitting on the ground. But so the sound just kind of doesn't get trapped in there the way it does in a lot of other places. So if you flipped on and were kind of like underwhelmed by that, don't be fooled. Like, those people were loud and they were into it, I can guarantee you. But I say all that to say, like, I do think they're, to his point, that it's a place that expects winning. Just ask their football coaches, you know, and likes a winner and will support a winner. And Virginia Tech is certainly on that path. I think they, you know, whether next year's team would be hard pressed to be better, right? But if next year's team is good again, and we expect it to be, I think they just kind of build on what they started last year in terms of kind of building a baseball culture, because these things take time. Unfortunately, as much as Teddy, I would love it to be, baseball is not a sport that just kind of comes with this type of fan support and excitement built in. Sometimes you do have to kind of condition your fans to be ready to be engaged during baseball season. I think Virginia Tech's on that path.
And, you know, he made a good point that, you know, their fans just want to support a winner and, you know, they're hungry for it. And last year was a great year for Virginia Tech athletics, and baseball was a part of that, and they happily jumped on board. And I think that, you know, that's the kind of season you need to, you know, really get something rolling. And the challenge now is sustaining it. And this is a program that has only been to the NCAA tournament in back-to-back years twice in its history, which in itself is kind of remarkable. And it hasn't been done in Blacksburg since the turn of the century. So there's some of that is just they flat out didn't make the tournament for like a decade here. They hadn't made it since 2013, but finding a way to sustain success. And you know, we talked about that in the interview, and Chef has been somebody that has kind of figured out how to do that a little bit throughout his career. Doing that now for Virginia Tech would be critical for the program. And if you look at our Never Too Early top 25, you'll see Virginia Tech checking in at like 11. And it's a team that I think you can feel pretty good about for next year. We didn't dive too deeply into 2023 with Coach, but I mean, Carson DeMartini has gone off in the Cape Cod League, especially at the end of the season. I don't have his full season stats, but I know like the playoffs have been very good to Carson DeMartini in the Cape Cod League. And, you know, he was already a freshman All-American. I don't know that, like, it's unfair to be like, well, if he takes another step forward, like, look at how good he could be. Like, yeah, but like, if he just does what he did again, like, that's a really impressive season. And so, yes, even though they're losing guys like Schoble and Bittison and Cross, you know, you do have impressive players coming back as well. And I don't know that this is going to be like a historically great offense again. They hit 126 home runs as a team. They're losing a fair number of that with, you know, Schobel hit 19, Bittesen hit 14, Cross hit 17. I'm missing Cade Hunter, who hit 17. Like, there's a lot of production exiting, but there still are some really talented pieces for Virginia Tech to build an offense around. And like he mentioned, on the mound, they're more experienced now. One of the reasons we like them so much is that they can bring back Griffin Green and Drew Hackenberg at the front of the rotation, and with some additional players coming in around them to, you know, help surge that forward. They just have more experience on the mound going into this year. I think there's a lot to like just about their ability to run back so much on the mound.
Yeah. And I think on the mound, they have the advantage next year of, you know, getting Drew Hackenberg as a sophomore as opposed to a freshman. He was so, so good for so much of the year last year as a freshman. And it just felt like he really ran out of gas late. And barring there have been some sort of injury he was nursing, and I don't know that. I'm just saying like that, maybe that was it. But at a bare minimum, it just seemed like he wore down a little bit. And there's a whole class of pitchers where that happens to freshmen every year. Got, you know, Hagen Smith is probably an example for Arkansas. Brady Tigert, frankly, for Arkansas. Guys that just wear down as the season goes on, but he comes back stronger, a little bit better. You know, if Griffin Green takes a step forward, and their pitching staff last year was kind of, you look, especially when you look at the relievers on the stat line, I mean, their pitching staff was all about kind of just throwing numbers at you. And I think they'll still be able to do that. You know, Jonah Herney and Henry Weicker and Christian Worley, who came on strong late in the year. They really liked the way he emerged. So I do think they'll still be able to do that, because I also trust that they're going to add some guys who can add to that. They did a very good job in the transfer portal on the mound last year, and I think they will continue to do so. Offensively, you know, you're right in that I don't think this offense will be better, but it's a group that if they are, that would be great, because it means they'll be, you know, an excellent offense again. But that's just going to be
if they're better, you're talking about maybe the best offense in the sport.
Correct.
So
correct. Yes. But, you know, you're talking about a guy in Jack Hurley who was on the collegiate national team, made the final roster. Like, you know, it's not crazy to think, like, I mean, getting drafted where Gavin Cross did might be off the table, but again, a high bar to clear. But could he be a, you know, first couple round pick? Like, absolutely. You know, as a guy who's a really dynamic offensive talent, a little bit unorthodox, you know, like a lot of movement in his setup and his swing, but gets it done. Good dynamic defender. He's really a center fielder that's been kind of relegated to left field because he plays in an athletic outfield, you know, historically involving Gavin Cross, right? So, you know, good athlete there, good offensive player. And then Carson DeMartini, you're right to highlight him. I mean, finished last season on a 10-game hitting streak for Virginia Tech. Had a three-hit game against Oklahoma in the Super Regional, and just kind of looks the part, for lack of a better way of putting it. I'm not a scout. I'm not a particularly astute evaluator, I don't think, but you just kind of look at him and you see that the athleticism, and he's just like a real loose athlete, and really built well for a freshman last year. And it's just like kind of just like the skill is just kind of like exploding out of him. You know, you can just like see it. Like, I think he could be poised for a, you know, first team All-American kind of year next season, because it just felt like he was on the cusp of something late last year. And maybe that's what we're going to see moving forward. Certainly also a great head of hair, so that certainly counts for something. But so I think it's, you know, it's, you combine that with, you know, they've got a couple of centerpieces there. They've got some depth pieces back, you know, Eduardo Malinowski. And I think a guy to watch too there is Carson Jones. He's a little bit like, he reminds me a little bit of last year with Tennessee, having Blake Burke and having Christian Moore, where it was like, well, these guys should be playing every day. They just don't have spots for them. Carson Jones was a little bit like that for Virginia Tech last year. He had 8 home runs and 55 at bats. So he's a guy who I think probably projects to slot into a regular role and could immediately be a star. So you combine that with the fact that, hey, this is a coaching staff that clearly knows how to coach offense. And oh, by the way, they play in a pretty offensive environment in Blacksburg. Now, the offense is going to be good next year. And so if they're telling us that they like where the pitching is at, maybe relative to last year, this obviously, at least given that, is just going to be a very dangerous Virginia Tech team once again.
One other thing is that they fielded 980 as a team this year. That was good for 15th in the country. And I feel like that went under the radar because the offense was so good and they had a good 1-2 punch. Like, we didn't, I don't ever remember mentioning how good they were defensively. But that was obviously a big asset for them. They are going to have to turn over some key pieces there, starting with Schobel at shortstop, and Hunter behind the plate, and I guess Cross in center field. So finding a way to do that and maintain being that good defensively, I think would be significant. It would certainly help the pitching staff as well. But that was kind of an underrated aspect of this team, I feel like. And if they can find a way to continue that good defensive play, that would really help them moving forward as well. We discussed it slightly with Coach Chef Joe, the hammer of it all. Like, we have not really gotten into it here on the podcast. I don't think that the NCAA, what they did to teams with the props and all the rest of it, that is still a little bit up in the air for next year, but you said it. I think both of us would love to see the NCAA take a little more enlightened stance than they seem to be right now about the use of props. I understand on field, they don't do that in football. But they're also not where Virginia Tech and where Tennessee and where a lot of these teams are using their props. They're not like really on the field either. Like, they're right out front in front of their dugout. So I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is. I just know that a lot of people enjoyed it, and eliminating it from the game completely would be a little bit unfortunate, and would certainly, it just doesn't seem like is the kind of thing that really needs to be addressed right now. But generally, I think the NCAA and their umpires police what happens after home runs and the celebrations thereof too much already, let alone what happens with and without props.
Yeah, I mean, every year some poor batter gets pushed up the first baseline. I think you said it right. Like, why is this a priority? Frankly, but I tweeted this like after kind of that initial piece of news leaked out, they were looking at that I really hope I really hope there's a reason for this having come into the conversation beyond just a bunch of people got their feelings hurt because Tennessee wears a fur coat and Virginia Tech slams a hammer into the ground after home runs. I think there seems to be, to think about it charitably, I think there seems to be this fear of some slippery slope that we're on. And while I understand generally trying to avoid slippery slopes if you can, I'm just not sure, I'm just not sure we're in like grave danger of, Virginia Tech or Tennessee or whoever, like running out like right in front of the mound and slamming a hammer or doing a dance like in front of the pitcher. Like, I just don't think we're going to get there. And I tell you what, like, let's make a deal. If we can keep on field celebrations or just not having to restrain them to the dugout, if we're allowed to keep, like, let's call them on deck circle celebrations, that's actually a more accurate way to put it. If we get to a point where, the players start running out and slamming hammers in front of the mound, in front of the pitcher, like, then we can revisit it. But until then, let's maybe just like let these kids have a little bit of fun. That's kind of the way I see it.
Yeah. If they can just tell them to confine it to the warning track,
there just seems to be a lot of fear about something that I just don't think is going to be a problem. Like,
also, just pitch better.
Right. Well, there's that. I mean, that's a great point. Always a true fact. You don't want to get celebrated on. There's an alternative,
So we'll see what all comes of that. I just hope that Virginia Tech is able to keep having fun. If they do have to take the hammer away, that they can find a new way, because it was fun to watch. I understand that taunting is a real thing and all the rest of it. I just don't think that a lot of what's happening right now falls into that. We'll see. That's going to do it for us today on the Baseball America College Podcast. If you enjoyed our conversation with John Scheff today, we'll have plenty more of those as we continue throughout the offseason. We come at you weekly here on the Baseball America College Podcast, so make sure you are subscribed on your favorite podcasting app, be that Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. You can hit that follow button, like button, whatever the nomenclature is, and we'll pop into your phone once a week with another edition of the Clubhouse Conversation series throughout the off season. You can follow Joe and me on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. Joe is at Joe Healy, BA. And baseballamerica.com is where you want to go for all of the content of the written variety, of which there is plenty, and we will keep going throughout the off season with that as well. So thank you all for listening. For Joe, I'm Teddy. We'll talk to you next time.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.